Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3, and it's time for Tech Talk, where we get analysis on the latest coming out of the tech world. I'm Rachel Kelly, and with us we have Wong Kai-yi, tech contributor from The Straits Times, to give us a lowdown on the tech news that matters this week. Now, Kai-yi, the coronavirus has shuttered people indoors, and that's given a boost to makers of PC peripherals as people work or study from home. Logitech International reported a 13.6% rise in fourth quarter sales as more people used its products. Which areas did the company see the most growth, and what figures did it report?
Oh, if you're anything like me, I've been buying stuff more and more, and I think some of these things are computer peripherals. Unfortunately, you know, e-commerce shopping websites are literally just a click away. I might be contributing to this rise in sales, so to speak. So Logitech, I think it's been growth in three key areas. So you see webcams, keyboards, mice. As people start to build out their home offices, they start to build out their workstations at home. And they also have seen rises in video conferencing devices and software. Yeah, so its fourth quarter sales rose to $709.2 million, and that is compared to about $624 million a year ago. Operating income rose 23.3% to $79 million in the quarter that ended in March. And for the full year, the company reported a 6.7% rise in sales, which met its 2020 financial year outlook for a mid to high single-digit percentage rise. And annual operating income, which stands at $387 million, it actually beat its target range, its 2020 financial year target range of $365 million to $375 million. So that's comfortably, say, about 10-plus million, you know, increase over its target. So clearly, you know, people are looking at this as a sort of long-term kind of thing, you know, when they work from home, and that very well may continue in future. So people are looking at, you know, just trying to build out the software and the hardware that they own to kind of hunker down for the long term.
So how does this compare to previous quarters, though? I mean, is this quite a high figure in comparison to what they usually report?
From what I can see, it's actually accelerating the trend that people, you know, that's happening rather. So video conferencing, remote working, you know, and you have video gamers, you know, streaming content online. And for what it's worth, Logitech CEO Bracken Darrell, he said the pandemic hasn't changed these trends, it has accelerated them.
Right.
So it seems that, you know, yeah. So when it seems that people, you know, the, like I said earlier, the coronavirus has shut in our homes. We can't go out. So the only thing left to do is to stare at either a big or small black screen the entire day, isn't it? And I think we will see in future, you know, more and more kind of digital online-related trends start to pop up. Like I mentioned earlier, video gaming, for example, the rise of streaming. And when you stream a game, you know, you need high-powered peripherals, you need high-definition webcams, you need high-powered computers, you need very good keyboards, that sort of thing. And looking at the product range that Logitech offers to people, this is right up the alley, you know. And, you know, for computer peripheral makers like Razer, Logitech, Microsoft, that these sorts of companies, it's a boon for them. And we could also talk about the rise of, or rather, the PC as a mainstay, because, you know, people have been talking about the rise of mobile computing, for example, and say that, oh, iPads are going to replace PCs and all that, but actually, no.
PCs,
I mean,
are back in action.
You've been working on a computer. Exactly. I mean, you've been working on a PC the entire day, and so have I. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people are doing that too. For example, kids who learn from home, who study at home, for example. An iPad, yes, it might be a good educational tool, but it can't do the things that a full PC can. So, for example, it may not have a full-size keyboard, a large screen, USB ports to plug drives in and out of, that kind of thing. Just going off on a tangent here, PCs and, you know, the general PC periphery are here to stay.
So, Kai-yi, talking about other trends that you're seeing in the market at the moment, alongside more people working from home during the pandemic, there are also a rising number of scammers and hackers. Can you tell us what's been happening?
You have a large sort of group of PC users. You're going to have trends like this, right? So there have been hackers that have registered domains posing as, you know, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and Google Meet-related URLs. So these are the top three video conferencing pieces of software that we're using during this sort of shelter at home pandemic time. And, you know, as more people use these video conferencing services, these domains, these malicious domains, they pose as official links and they trick people into clicking them. It's a good time to also think about your online security as we spend so much time online now. Just in the last 3 weeks, for example, this study by Checkpoint Research said about 2,500 Zoom-related domains have been registered. And this company, Checkpoint Research, they determined that 32 of those domains are malicious and 320 are suspicious.
Wow.
So clearly there's a big number. Exactly. So clearly there's a big, I don't know if you could call it a market for malicious software and for malicious actors to try and steal your data. So it's good practice, you know, now that we're spending so much time online, to make sure that the email you receive and the Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Google Meet URL is actually from a company or a person you were expecting to meet. So that reduces the risk of you falling prey to such malicious actors posing as who knows, you know, maybe government officials, that sort of thing.
Right. And speaking of online warnings, joining the effort to combat misinformation surrounding COVID-19, Twitter said that it will add labels and warning messages on some tweets with disputed or misleading information about COVID-19. Can you tell us how will Twitter show these warnings and how could it impact users?
So Twitter said that on Monday it have a new approach to misinformation and it will eventually extend these measures to other topics. So Twitter's new labels, they will provide links to more information in cases where the risk of harm from the tweet is not severe enough to be removed, but if the tweet could confuse or mislead people. So the tweet may not be so malicious as Twitter decides to remove it, but still it could cause people to, you know, think twice about the information they receive. And if this information is misleading, the company is going to put a label on it saying that, for example, you know, all of the content shared in this tweet conflicts with guidance from public health experts regarding COVID-19. And then there's a button to click to learn more or to view the tweet in question. They will look similar to ones launched to flag synthetic and manipulated media. For example, maybe a video of a government official who's speaking, but who seems to be saying something other than official words, right? So these deep fakes that we call them have been around on the internet for some time. And with the rise of AI, you know, your voice or my voice could be sort of manipulated into someone else's. And that's quite scary because,
I mean, on that track, how have other tech companies been responding to misinformation during the pandemic?
Yep, the good news is that a lot of other social media companies are working on eradicating or trying to reduce at least these misleading pieces of information on their site. So Facebook and YouTube, for example, and also Google, they're under pressure to combat the misinformation spreading on their platforms. So Facebook, it works with third-party fact-checking partners, which include Reuters. It rates and debunks viral content on its site with labels. And last month, YouTube said it would start showing information panels with third-party fact-checked articles for U.S. video search results. So not yet across the entire world, but at the very least, these companies are doing something to and not saying that, hey, you know, we're just platforms for this content and we're not in charge of it. They're actually taking a more proactive approach in trying to remove misleading pieces of information on their websites, which is only a good thing.
Now, Kai, this next topic is quite interesting because, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about AI and the role that AI plays in terms of evolving workforce, particularly, you know, when it comes to audit and finance and other areas. And I believe singers and songwriters are actually safe from AI. Is that correct?
I think the saying goes that, you know, if anything requires creativity, a robot can't replace you yet.
Well, a Dutch team of academics experimenting in songwriting using artificial intelligence algorithms discovered to their horror that the songs created by these algorithms contain lyrics like "kill the government" and "kill the system." What's the story behind this?
Oh, this is just incredible. So imagine, you know, you put your AI to work to create a song for a song contest. And your AI, you know, goes through the internet and comes back with lyrics like that. I think that's just gonna, you know, make the hairs at the back of your neck stand. So that was an experience of, like you said, the team of Dutch academics. So they were entering a song contest, which was arranged by a Swedish news TV station. So the team, they use AI techniques to create a sort of hit predictor based on the melodies and rhythms, and they had to generate a song to enter this contest.
This sounds like an episode of Black Mirror.
We could go on to Spot the Dog as well, you know, the one at Bishan Park right now, but yes, that's another episode of Black Mirror. So the team, they created this song, and it used an AI system that was based on the social media platform Reddit. And I guess when you base it on such a crowd-sourced piece of technology like this, like Reddit has everything from moderate to extreme views and all that. And when you kind of combine all these statements into one, you are definitely going to get lyrics that contain things like kill the government and kill the system.
I'm sure AI can be used in some way, shape or form for the betterment of music creation.
That's right. I mean, if we look at music, it follows a certain rhythm. It follows, you know, some mathematical principles here and there. I'm not going to get into it because I'm not a musician. But what I do understand is that when you put AI to understanding maybe popular pop rhythms, for example, it could tell you that, hey, if you create a 3-beat or a 7-beat phrase in the music, your music is going to be as popular as, say, 90% of the pieces of music out there. And that's something, you know, maybe humans can't tell you, but a machine that reads the music can. And if we take it again one step further, I'm not sure if you remember, there was actually a very interactive Google Doodle that launched in March last year. So I actually played with this. It encouraged users to input a melody. So you could click and launch, you could put music notes on staff lines, and then the AI would generate harmonies in the style of Bach.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that was very interesting. And I mean, I have not a single ounce of music genius in me, but even my music that came out sounded impressive, like sounded something like as if Bach himself had made it. And it seemed that within 2 days, the Doodle had created 55 million snippets of music.
Fascinating, Kai. And, you know, before we go, I mean, we could talk about this all day, but before we go, I'm sure you've got an interesting tech fact for us today.
That's right. So if you're thinking about buying a cheap phone from several years ago, you might want to think twice, because that phone could have security vulnerabilities that have not been patched. So if your phone is, say, maybe anywhere from, or if rather the phone you're thinking of buying is anywhere from 2 to 3 years old, there is a good chance that a lot of the software that it's running is not patched, and that opens you up to lots of security vulnerabilities. And therefore, it's always good, if you can, to buy a newer model of that phone, because most likely it would have the security vulnerabilities patched, and you wouldn't have you know, such headaches in the future.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and your insights, Kai.
Thanks, Rachel.
We've been speaking to Wong Kai, tech contributor from The Straits Times.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.